It's time for us to get love right, folks. And so we invite you to check out the King and Queen of Hearts.
This is an incredible training for couples who are struggling in unsatisfying sex lives.
It's also for lifelong learners, people whose relationship is great and they want to make it even better.
In this three-part training that is filled with 8 different tutorials like the art of tantric kissing, eye gazing that is deep and intimate, connective and not creepy, and sacred sexual meditations, you do them with your lover to juice you up before sex. Communication tips and really, really valuable relationship essentials are all found in this training.
You know, a common mistake couples make is they wait, they put it off, they avoid, they resist. And if you want to continue doing that, well, good luck. But if you really want to make a change, get this today. Don't let another month go by where you're losing precious connection with your partner.
Plus, you can't beat the price on this program. One of our clients, Casey, said a spark in their intimacy is back on track.
Now, Sarah and her husband, you know what she told us, Willow? She said, finally, he learned how to kiss her right.
Oh my God, hallelujah. So happy for Sarah.
So if you want some radical changes in your love life, go to sexreimagined.com, click on courses, and scroll until you find the King and Queen of Hearts. And because you are a fan of the podcast, you can use the King and Queen 10 code in order to get 10% off. That is King and Queen 10, and you can use it in the checkout. The OG of the OG when it comes to Tantra in America.
Charles Muir is the originator of Tantra, the art of conscious loving and sacred spot massage techniques. He's been quoted in over 100 books on Tantra.
Yeah, beautiful wife, Christy Muir, has been on a spiritual path, going to pilgrimages all over the world. She studied with so many incredible teachers. She's an incredible somatic therapist and around queen bee, baby. And she is now the primary female facilitator at Source School of Tantra Yoga. And they're here today to shine their love on all of us. And you get to hear a lot of great stories on being in partnership and having magic moments and rewiring the brain.
So let's now tune in, turn on, and fall in love. Charles and Kristen Muir.
Welcome to the Sex Reimagined podcast, where sex is shame-free and pleasure-forward. Let's get into the show.
We have Charles and Kristy Muir, personal beloved friends, here today to talk about some very important things to people who have a lot of experience seeing transformations in the lives of people who have overcome sexual trauma and who have wrestled with shame and come out the victor over the shame monster. So welcome.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Right now, I'm in Hawaii and they're back home in California. So it would have been fun maybe to have done this back home, all three of us in the same room.
I'm curious for both of you, like what was one of your earliest moments in life where you're like, wow, there's some shame here. Because you both have been on the journey for such a long time. I'm just curious if you can recall way back when you were like, wow, I need to heal this. This is getting in the way of my life force energy.
The shame as an emotion gets drilled into us. We don't have shame when we're a baby.
Right.
We fart, we poop, we laugh. And it's baked into our cake from society, from role models like our parents, our friends who have no education. And I was one of those kids, very curious. But there was no one to do it with. I lived in a very Roman Catholic neighborhood, street gang, actually. And I was the only Episcopalian. So I got the Catholic guilt with a little bit of underlying Protestant stuff. You should be ashamed if you don't have a work ethic, if you don't get married and have a kid, if you're not a productive man. Sexual shame is just made to its fullest by the Catholic Church, I believe. And thank God they're making some changes.
Yeah. Mm. We are starting to see that shift for sure.
And that's one of the major changes I see from when I was a child, a teenager, to now. And even from when I was a young yogi to now, sex was imbued with guilt, fear, and shame because of our lack of education and lack. Instead of getting information, we got false information. And you throw in the church and you're going to go to hell. Don't enjoy the experience. Don't have it. But when you do, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Right.
And I couldn't envision that as a 20-year-old yogi, how sex and as a society here in the West has changed in the last 70 years, even the last 50 years, even since the sexual revolution,
right.
I've watched things change. And that's looking into a future. You can't project from here how amazing it could be there in our future. What if we didn't, as a culture, have jealousy on us? Or the big three, guilt, fear, and shame. What if both could be just banished out of the chambers of our mind and new chambers, new neural circuits from the brain back to our genitals of this is heavenly, this is God's gift, and this is healthy to have these orgasms. And the tantric techniques that help you extend the orgasm, more powerful, longer, in more parts of you caused by different nerve endings than just the primary ones in the genitals.
Yeah, very well said. You know, as you asked the question about, you know, early experiences of shame, I was kind of going down memory lane and I was remembering a very early memory. I don't remember quite how old I was. I think I might've been like 4 or 5. And somehow I was in the hallway of the house that I was growing up in. Actually, I think it was maybe before my brother was born. So I might have even been younger than that. And I think I was like touching myself. Mm-hmm. And my mother came upon me and she found me. And she was like, ew, that's disgusting. Only do that in your own bedroom.
Wow.
And so contract, immediate contraction around, you know, it's not good to touch your own body and no kind of redirect around pleasure or like, oh, honey, yeah, you're discovering yourself. Why don't you, you know, go into your own room and do that in a private space? It's a wonderful thing. Like, no, nothing like that. Just layering disgust and immediate feelings of shame onto that.
Right.
So, you know, if our parents and the environment that we're are born into are carrying forward that generational shame, then it's really difficult to have a foundation of a healthy relationship to our own body and that energy as it arises. I can remember watching movies with my family when I was growing up. And if there was a sex scene that came on, everyone in the room stopped breathing. Nobody would look at each other. Nobody would say anything.
So awkward.
Everybody was frozen, tense, until the scene was over. And then it was like, oh, God.
I think a lot of people can relate to that feeling.
I mean, I think I still kind of feel that way if I see a sex scene and I'm watching something with my family. It's like, depends on how hot the sex scene is. But if there's just like a ton of nudity for a really long time and I'm watching like a film with my parents or and maybe my siblings, maybe not, but it is sort of like awkward, you know, it's like, it's a weird feeling, isn't it? Yeah. You know, and I don't know how much I need that to change in this lifetime. But wouldn't it be more comfortable if those sorts of things were just normalized and you didn't get a body sensation of embarrassment or awkwardness?
Right. And I mean, you joked about or made life more like, ooh, they're doing it.
You know, ooh, look how pretty your breasts are. I mean, I don't know. Like,
how about pausing the video and having a connect.
Right. Not necessarily a sexual connect with your parents, but like my parents threw on an animated video that I still kind of remember to give my brother and I the information about the birds and the bees.
Oh, really?
And I don't remember there ever being any kind of deeper talk about what it meant relationally and emotionally, or what kind of a person I should, you know, maybe wait for or look for as I'm coming into adolescence and having all of these feelings. And it was as though my parents didn't want to acknowledge that, you know, I was a sexual being and that, yes, I was touching myself. And then, yes, I was dating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it starts, you know, for me in the home, I didn't have religious conditioning directly. Oh. It was indirect from my parents, who both abandoned their religion and raised my brother and I without any religion. But I'm sure that there was residual, but I didn't really hear a lot about what it meant spiritually or to God. It was just this sense of, you know, sex being something that was like a secret kind of dirty pleasure. And right. I can remember being at school. I think I was in middle school or high school, and it was like recess. And there was this one boy who was running around teasing all the girls. I guess he just discovered that girls masturbate. Okay. And so he was like teasing everyone. He'd point at a girl and say, "Oh, I bet you do it like this. And I bet you do it like this." And he turned to me and he said, "Oh, and Christy, I bet you use all your fingers." I flushed with such shame. I was just like,
Wow. He had a wonderful imagination.
Well, I mean, it was like, well, I guess I've tried different fingers. Is that wrong?
Right.
Wow.
It really points to the cultural infusion of shame, like even beyond religion. I think because religion is so infused into our culture that
transfers
over.
That's interesting, because Charles and Christy, you guys have a significant age difference. And so I imagine, like, you got a conversation, or at least an animation, Christy, of some. Charles, did your parents say anything to you about sex and coming of age?
When I was about 15, my mom said, "You know, if you want to know anything about sex," or maybe she said doing it.
Okay.
"There's an encyclopedia that had one chapter about sex."
Oh, okay.
Basically pictures and. That was my, I don't talk about it. No. And she had her bedroom that was sanctioned to do that.
Right.
When she was caught touching herself. The house was a guilt zone.
Mm.
And I had more of a Catholic upbringing. And they could get off on Saturday night and do confession and be absolved of all guilt and all shame. Or fear of going to hell, as long as you told the priest. And they didn't do that in the Episcopal Church. They didn't have confession. You did a little prayer and said, "Scusi," and that was good. Right to heaven.
And I'm curious how both of your parents showed affection towards one another. If they were demonstrative, if they were loving towards each other, if there was a sense of sensuality between them.
Not in my family.
Not in your family.
No. I think my father was greatly conditioned by his Scottish, very proper mother, my grandmother, who I don't think ever had sex. She was always old. And she made one statement that was fed to me by my sister. My sister had just gotten pregnant with her second child. And Grandma said to Rosemary, "Rosemary, you got to tell him to get off the train before it reaches London."
You have to get off the train before it reaches London.
That's edging. Ben's Scottish.
Yeah. Pull out. Okay. Well, that's not such bad advice, I guess. From
my father never said anything.
Okay.
The star of my sexual life in my teen years was a street gang leader, Johnny Patinella.
That's right, Johnny.
Who was alleged the only guy that got laid in the 20 or so guys in my street gang.
Oh, so he knew everything. He was your
Well, he gave us educator. Things like, "Chucky, you got a fucking deep."
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you get giant in a pussy, you fuck them in the ass.
Oh, oh wow. At least someone was talking about fucking in the ass.
I didn't question that, you know, well in 17.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
And so when did it, I'm curious, Charles, like when did things like switch for you and awaken for you? I mean, you came from such a completely different upbringing to where you are now.
In the Bronx in the 50s and 60s.
Jewish girl with wonderful breasts decided she loved me. And I wasn't really a hood. I was just pretending real good to be a hood. And that I should go on to college. That was the first step. And then I got into yoga.
Yeah.
1966, I found a book on the subway.
How old were you?
I was 17 and a half.
Okay.
And I started yoga classes right after that. And Tantra was always hidden. Sex was taught, this is precious energy, don't waste it, be celibate. Which really means don't waste your vital essence.
Yeah.
Tantra said, it's vital essence. There are ways to build it and circulate it. And it's creative energy that can awaken all of your energy. And that was kind of captivating because I started feeling energy early on. And when I got my first Tantra book, maybe 3 years later, I got it in the mail in a plain brown wrapper. That's how they ship things, no Amazon. And it was called Tantra, the Yoga of Sex by Omar Garrison.
Oh, cool.
I got it 4 days before I went off to the Army for basic training.
Wow. Where did you order the book? Where did you find the book?
The back of a comic book or magazine. It was in the hidden.
Yeah.
How random. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, it's random that he found the yoga book on the subway, right?
Totally. I know. Yeah. I mean, I think that is such a testament to all of our paths. Anyone who's sort of in this industry and leading and teaching and guiding, it's like it comes to you in the most interesting way.
You don't know the value of it when you get it.
Yeah.
You know, when I walked over in the subway car because someone had left the book on the other end of the car and there was no one else there, my thought was, maybe it's porn.
Yeah, right.
So I
went. Your arrows took you there.
I went from Brooklyn to the Bronx. Coming home from college at night, I read this book and I said, this is amazing. I'm going to try it. And I opened to a random page and I did a bow position where you reach back and hold your legs behind you. And I pulled my back out.
Oh, shoot.
I had to see a chiropractor, and he started talking about stretching. So
That didn't deter you. The injury, that first injury, didn't deter you from going back and continuing to give it a try.
No, it confirmed what they said. We build up stiffness. We're usually flexible as babies. You can do the baby pose and everything.
Can do bow, baby, everything in between.
We build up blocks muscularly in our fascia, in our energy body, especially we build up blocks, and they either continue to get more blocked as we age, or if you're doing something such as Laya yoga, metaphysical hatha yoga, it removes those blocks. Each month, each year that you practice, you watch yourself grow younger. Because stiffness is the major characteristic of age.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Those meridians get clogged and stagnated. You
can't be a great lover if you're not flexible.
Right. Right. Well, you still have that book, Charles?
I still have that book. I have both of them.
Wow. That's great.
What about you, Chris?
What was your modeling between your parents regarding affection and sexuality and love?
I remember my parents hugging. I remember my parents like peck kissing, and maybe sometimes, you know, my dad would wrap his arms around my mom and like give her a little bit more affection. I don't remember any allusions to their sex life, any kind of references to that. I do remember as a child kind of, or a young person kind of, you know, being up at night and like not hearing them actually doing it. But like, I remember walking by my parents' room to go downstairs and I heard my dad say something to my mom like, hey, do you want to do it? Like, do you, you know, is this a good time? Oh,
yeah.
And kind of being like, oh, this is not the right time to be near my parents' bedroom, you know?
Yeah.
So, but it turns out my parents were actually hiding from me some pretty out there, you know, proclivities. And I'm not going to go too much into it because I don't want to invade their privacy. But my parents were a little bit more explored, you know, they explored out a little bit more sexually than I knew at the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was affection in my household. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then at what point for you, like, did you start to just feel your own sexuality in your body and start to understand that there was more to it than what you'd been led to believe as a kid?
Well, I feel that the feeling that there was more to it was just kind of innate for me. Yeah. It's sexual energy moving through my body was always a very powerful experience. You know, as an adolescent and a teenager, and to the point where, so my first boyfriend that I lost my virginity to, I was not his first. His first girlfriend had made him wait like over a year before having sex. And I met him and we were hanging out for a few months and I was like, I'm ready. Like, let's do this. And he was like, wait, are you sure? Aren't you supposed to make me wait? And I was like, no, I want it, you know? And so, you know, I was really looking for something. And, you know, when I got to college, I had a lot of partners. I just wanted to know what it felt like with different people. And then for a brief period of time, I actually danced in strip clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, explored expressing myself in that way and connecting with other people. And that's when I really started to recognize that unconsciousness, that there's a real dark underbelly to, you know, when sexuality is repressed and it's only let out in these very, in the places where the shame is allowed, but the lights are still off.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like compartmentalized spaces. Yeah.
Like, here's the place that if you're a man, you can come and you can take a deep breath and be like, oh, thank God, naked women and nobody's going to make me feel bad about it. Right. But it's still seen as something that is, you know, a baser sort of urge, and the energy in those places over time, I found that I couldn't sustain being in those environments over time because I would become so bitter and so jaded, and I would just really, it turned my outlook on men, it really plummeted from spending time in those spaces. So then there was kind of a going and a 180 that I did where I found yoga. I found yoga around the age of 20 and I started practicing and I got some of the same conditioning and teaching that Charles did early on his yogic path, was that this sexual energy is meant to be conserved. That when we have too much desire, that is something that keeps us from God and it keeps us from our enlightenment. And so in my early 20s, I kind of slowed down on exploring sexually and I went deep into my yoga path and I wanted to conserve this energy. And I did date some men who were very yogic, very spiritual, very afraid of their sexual energy. Mm-hmm. And so that led to several years where it was like, well, gosh, like, I don't really want one or the other.
Yeah.
I don't really want to either be a sexual person and then, you know, maybe be in this seedy underbelly, or be a spiritual person, but then have this real huge divide between this part of me that can make me feel so alive. So, you know, I wrestled with that for some years, actually. And then finally, it was right before I met Charles that it was just like, you know what? It's time. It's time for these two parts of me to merge and to blend and to come together. And I'd known that there was this tantra thing out there for a while, but most of the yoga that I had been around, it wasn't included. Nobody talked about that. Nobody taught that. Mm-hmm. So about 6 months before I met Charles, I really got clear. It's time for me to integrate my sexuality and my spirituality, it's time for me to explore this tantra thing. And so I took some steps in that direction. And the next thing I knew, I met this guy.
Wow. Yeah. It's like your clarity magnetized him to you.
Absolutely. I never could have imagined before he showed up in my life, I could have never imagined there was a being such as a Charles Muir on the planet.
Aww.
And then once I met him and encountered his work and lived with him.
He's one of a kind for sure. You know, Charles, you've really, you've done so much to contribute to the experience of sexual healing in bodies through all the students that you've taught over these many decades. I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about the chakras and what had their effect on how we store energy, whether that's repressed energy or memories of being neglected as a kid or sexual abuse. These things having to do with fear and shame and guilt. Can you say a little bit about how someone can work somatically with the chakras and their tissues to sort of relieve themselves from, you know, the pain of the past?
Yeah. We're led to believe that the psyche lives in the brain and consciousness lives in the brain. The Eastern understanding, my understanding that I share, is that each of the chakra regions, the third eye, which goes back through the pituitary and pineal glands all the way to the back of the brain where the most pure consciousness lives, uncolored by past or present. And we have to get masterful at touching areas that have nerve endings and waking them up so they're firing, so that they can go up the various neural pathways to the brain, to the limbic system. And then the limbic system, like a computer, opens up all of the files in the brain that have to do with this subject. Pleasure is happening. Guilt, fear, shame. You got a room in your psyche where you store all those memories. And when there's trauma, it's big imprint. And it often dominates how the message goes from the brain, from those rooms, down completing a neural circuit with the genitals. So they're feeling more, so that they're coming alive, so that the past, which is often painful and confusing to go through, we stop connecting to that. We stop filtering our energetic and physical experiences of pleasure and arousal through these rooms. There are other rooms where, yeah, there's possible ecstasy here, this could be love, but these new rooms, these new places in the brain, pure consciousness, getting imprinted with moments, hours, a relationship worth of being pleasured in these new ways, having experience. And those parts of the brain become dominant.
Mm-hmm.
The present and the future, bright, not colored by a past that was, hey, it's got trauma, it's got conditioning, it's got guilt, fear, shame. It's the biggest sex organ is the brain, but the brain is in each chakra. So we don't just touch the second chakra, the genitals. Yes, we get masterful at pleasing that and causing arousal to lengthen and orgasmic movement of energy upwards, a common experience in lovemaking. So touch on those chakras, connecting the second chakra with those other chakras. Let's say I'm doing sacred spot with one hand, and my other hand is on the front of the body, stimulating the vagus nerve, completing a circuit between them so that passion and love can be one, or passion and power can be connected.
When you say the vagus nerve, what are you touching, just so that people don't know a reference of what you mean when you say touching the vagus nerve? You're touching the genitals?
Well, the front of the body, and it certainly includes the breast, but it also includes the entry points here on both sides that go into the cranium and connect to the brain and can cause an orgasm simply from stimulating the vagus nerve, the front of the body. And every now and then you run into a woman or a man who has energetic rushes from stimulation to the nipples or touching the chakras. The navel can be very, very sensuous, but it can also have a lot of stuff, especially stuff having to do about that person's mother. And psychically, we're still connected from her navel to our navel.
Right, that psychic umbilical cord.
Yeah. Yeah, so we work the neck and throat. We run energy mudras into the brain. We teach a dozen different mudras to run a current through parts of the brain or connect one part of the brain with another part of the brain. We have those connections, but they aren't always connections that are good for us. The amygdala, the worry part of the brain, that's its job. And worry sometimes is for good reason. They just discovered 3 years ago, connects to the memory part of the brain, the hippocampus. There's a circuit. There's a circuit. I have a fear. Hey, hippocampus, why should I be afraid? And hippocampus say, well, this happened and this happened. You should be afraid. And it sends a circuit back. Mm-hmm. And it's a never-ending circuit of mind screwing ourselves. Mm-hmm. Worry, validation to worry. Worry doesn't serve us.
And so what are you doing to affect that circuit? How can you, if that circuit, it goes on autopilot, right? And it runs that worry. Something gets triggered and that same worry repeats itself. Is there a way to bring that sort of present time love to help reroute that circuit to something that might be different? Like, instead of worry, let's replace this with an experience of love or belonging or comfort or excitement. Is there a way to plug out of that loop and plug a new loop in?
Mudras are finger, hand, or body positions of Tantra that greatly influence energy. So if your partner is just afraid, worried, anxiety, I don't know why I'm afraid, it's likely the hippocampus is involved, maybe not remembering the trauma or the conditioning or the guilt wound, but still influencing the circuit. So if I would want to, the amygdala usually is firing on one side to the hippocampus. Can be either side. So you have to, okay, the hippocampus is run amok. Let me bring it into balance. Let me interrupt the normal circuit that goes right back to here. Let me hold the amygdala, two thumbs, and let me bring my hands around to the back of the brain and run a circuit from the finger to the amygdala. Interrupting its current flow. We call it tantric rewiring.
Cool. And for those
and
of you who
do that on a partner while you're pleasuring them.
You ask the partner to do it while you're doing the stimulation.
Okay.
So and they're doing this on themselves.
When you're sitting, when the woman sits astride you, she completes a circuit by bringing her feet together and pressing her chakras against yours. But your hands are free and you can still reach around and tap the back of her brain, tap the amygdalas. And we learn about energy current, that the fingers have current, which have charge, positive or negative, or in the case of the thumbs, neutral current. And we play with energy, running current through.
So this could be really useful for women or for anyone, women, men, anyone in between who has a history of breakups, right? And you just start to get jaded after a while. Like, oh, I just, another one bites the dust. Another one bites, am I ever going to find the one? And, you know, you're just going down that path and you're taking this sort of like jaded experience, this fear from previous experiences into the next relationship. You're kind of setting yourself up for failure in that way. So this would be a good way to break that circuitry and start to create a different, like an upward spiral in who you're magnetizing and who you're getting into relationships with and how you're navigating them as well without fear. Love that.
When, for instance, you say an affirmation with your fingers doing a mudra here, 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 and around the lips, you're literally grabbing a hold of the two sides of the brain.
Right.
Emotional, logic, opposed to one another. And you're bringing them into balance. You're blocking out the external world. Not hearing, not seeing, not smelling, nothing. You're inside. And when you take in a breath and you hold that mudra and you repeat in your very own mind, the universe is now sending me a man worthy of my love. And you can spell it out in a couple of sentences. But always the universe is aligning itself with my intentions. Because otherwise it's an unconscious attraction. We attract those men.
Right.
That's the reason. Why do I always get the same kind of man?
Right.
It's because that's your vibration that you're attracting.
Mm-hmm.
But the brain is powerful.
Sure.
And positive imprints, it's like turning on a light in a really dark room. Darkness starts to fade, and then you turn on more light, and then the room is not dark anymore. It's space. It's spacious. It's consciousness. And that's where love waits for you to join with you in the experience. When the balanced brain comes into the heart and also into the genitals, consciousness, love, and passion are uniting. And then it's not sex anymore. Then it's this tantric thing called sexual love.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of sex and not be conscious and only be firing in guilt places and shame places.
Right. Or have a lot of sex and not be connected to love. I love that. It's like a beautiful trinity of energy coming together to elevate sexuality. And before we move deeper into that, you know, there are some people who are listening to this show and they won't be watching it. And so I'd love for you to describe what you were doing when you were holding that brain mudra. Can you describe where you had the fingers for those who are listening versus watching?
I can do that. But I would say if you go to our YouTube channel, it's there being taught. And there's a whole practice period in one of our video programs they can download. The thumbs are pressing into the holes of the ear to block out sounds pretty fully. The index finger connected to the heart chakra are on the eyeballs with a medium pressure. Not the third eye, through the soft tissue that goes right through the visual cortex to the back of the brain. Closing off smell. I don't want the external world smells to keep me away from internalizing my focus. It's called pratyahara. And then closing off the lips with the pinky and the ring finger. So now the current, positive right hand, energy is going out the fingers, being pulled into the brain by the left hand's negative charge. Not good and bad, positive and negative, like sides of the battery. And you're running a current from the fingers that always goes to the neutral current. It's the power of the thumbs. The thumbs mix with anything. And you're connecting. You're in the cathedral of your mind without sound. And when the sound, it could be a mantra in your mind or out loud, or it can be an affirmation. Affirmations are many times more powerful when you're in the center of your brain and the brain is balanced, because you get it on the feeling level as well as the you get the picture as well as the words that describe the picture.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. I think that's there's kind of gives you a view into what some of the more esoteric practices of Tantra can look like when you start to go into and experience the reality of energy, that energy can be felt, that it can be transmitted, that you can not only increase your own body's feeling and ability to run energy, but that that skill can then be taken to send energy to another body. Can you say a little bit about energy transmission, Charles, to from one person to another person, especially in sexuality?
I want Christy to answer this and just describe a practice that we do most nights.
Great.
When we get into bed. We don't know what the future is. Is there going to be touching? Is there going to be love? It's to connect our two energies, which sometimes during the day, different people doing different things. It's like a guitar that's at it. We're not in tune with each other.
Mm.
And so what do we do?
Well, we do the harmonization of moods and energies. And, you know, this is a really tangible way to experience the power of, you know, connection to shift our energetic states. Basically, it's not exactly the transmission of energy with our hands, but it's something that you can feel where we'll come and bring our bodies together in bed and our chakras aligned. And we will start by harmonizing our breathing. We'll focus on a chakra, the same chakra at the same time, and we'll take several breaths in with a gentle hold and then slowly out with a gentle pause. And we'll do that a few times at each chakra. And then often, unless we're just super sleepy, we'll also do some rounds where we reciprocate our breath, where one is breathing out while the other is breathing in, and do several rounds of that. And it's a beautiful way to just kind of take two separate people, as Charles was just saying, you're living your lives and you're doing different activities. And so you are tuned to your own experience and the other is tuned to their own experience. Sometimes when you come and bring those two different tunings together, they have a repulsion. There's just something that's a little bit misaligned. But when we do the breath like this, it helps to bring our tuning, you know, into harmony. So we feel harmonized and we melt into this state of connection. And from there, anything that we do from that state of being deeply energetically connected, it just feels more powerful, more potent, more real. We're right here, right now with each other. We're present. And it's really not so much anymore about two bodies trying to get something from one another as it really is two points of consciousness having an interaction, an exchange of some sort. It's very beautiful.
You gradually bring her from the stillness of breathing to embody her, to bring her into her body.
Mm.
And that involves touching the different chakras and touching them in different ways. There's still touch. There's caress, which has endless variety when you're touching your partner.
Mm-hmm.
There's practices of squeezing. There's tapping. What did I leave out?
That's right.
Oh, the creative use of your nails, which are living energy that we can actually watch grow over a short period. And you vary the pressure, you vary the speed, you stay with stillness. Now Christy's in her body and unconsciously maybe she's starting to caress me back. So we've gradually gone in the direction of, do we want to go all the way to Sacred Union? It's late. Got to get up in the morning. A little Sacred Union for a little while, 5 minutes, is better than not connecting. Because Tantra is practices that you actually practice. You practice the art of love. And you especially grow when you're shut down to love. And your partner wants to love you. And no, I don't feel like loving. I got a headache, I'll say. Or I'm having my period, or I'm premenstrual, or perimenstrual. Or there are reasons, but 5 minutes, let's connect.
Mm-hmm.
Let's connect a little deeper.
I mean, imagine if all couples around the world were doing this every night together. It would be such a different way of waking up together, a different way of co-parenting together, a different mm-hmm. way of coming living in a household fight. Together, that's a different way future. Of fighting together. Yeah, yeah, all of it.
Yeah,
that's our future. Change is happening.
It is, yeah.
There are more of us connecting consciously at this time in the planet's history
than ever before.
Than ever. Yet information is available and out there and on the internet and free. And your friends, the ones that are smiling, they maybe got it, but they haven't shared it because of their own. We don't want you thinking of us that way.
Right.
But we really love making love with each other.
Right.
That will become easier in the future. The ones that don't make love and don't practice love will be the minority.
I think what this also is demonstrating, that maybe part of the byproduct of having a practice like this, this conscious cuddle where you're being intentional, you're having awareness that you've been separate, and now you're doing something intentional that gets your breath rhythmically connected, which can only facilitate better attunement to each other. So like the having a conscious practice that drops you into attunement makes you more sensitive to your partner's needs, to their feelings, to their thoughts, to their responses in their body. Are they opening with their breath? Are they closing and shut down? Can you bring awareness and sensitivity through attunement to really know how to be more skillful at harmony and at love? I think having practices that are non-sexual, but are connected to, oh, there's my doggy, but that are connected to a practice of intentional loving. And it's like it drops deposits. And I think the other thing that I know just from learning and teaching with you, Charles, is that the chakras have a relationship to each other. If you're in relationship, your chakras know the other person. And so even if you're coming back from a fight and you're feeling shut down towards each other, if you cannot talk and come into a deeper sense of vulnerability and be there in your compassion, self-compassion, and compassion for your partner, your chakras' relationship to each other will start to vibrate and attune and will help you come back home. And I think one of the things I would love the audience to know, something that I have taken away into every relationship since my relationship with Charles, is the quest, the challenge. How quickly can you come back to love when you found yourself separate from it? And we become separate when we are depressed. We become separate when we feel anxious. We become separate when we are in a frustrating cycle within our relationship. And so when you challenge yourself to go, what do I need to come back to love when I'm separate from it? Man, what a powerful conscious choice to show up for yourself, number one. And then to have that then show up for relationship. Any words of wisdom from you, Christy, or from Charles regarding this idea of coming back to love faster and faster?
Yeah. Nobody's to blame. And you both have a part of it. Mm-hmm. So rather than discussing it or fighting about it, you did this. No, I didn't do this. I said that. No, because that can just get worse. You don't threaten the partner. You say, I think I'm out of tune with you. Can we do a practice? Let's take it into our bodies, take it into our breath. And while we're doing the breathing, we're imagining, part of the advanced practice, when we exhale, that the energy goes from our core out the front of our chakra. And when we breathe in, we're like a sponge. I open. I take you into the chakras where I'm breathing. So that gets you out of the pattern of relationship. Mm. Because every relationship carries with it or builds up a room in our psyche of relationship. And it's usually older than this relationship. It has to do with past relationships and mom and dad models. So if I can own that, no, we don't have to agree on everything. We're different. We're going to have disagreements. And this disagreement has triggered my stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've responded in a way that triggers her stuff, which triggers her to respond to my stuff, back at my stuff, which takes us deeper and deeper into the shit of our psyche. Mm-hmm. But once we're in it, that's where we can do a practice. Let me download this. Let me own it. Let me feel it. Let me be observed. And let me take breath and sound the release of it. Because the power of breath joined to sound is incredibly powerful to help us go from this to where the energy flows. Now connection can happen because I'm not closed anymore.
There's a certain level of vulnerability that has to be embraced when doing this.
Good point, Willow.
And you know, I agree with you, Leah. This is one of the great gifts of actually being in relationship with Charles is this turnaround and the willingness to remember, you know what? Do I want to be right or do I want to be in love? Do I really like this state of being angsty and having my mind remind me of all of the things that I think this person has done wrong? Or do I want to be in love? I want to be in love. And so once you recognize that, then the practice does become, as you said, like, how quickly can I turn this around? And so, you know, what I've learned for myself is that sometimes it does take me a little bit of self-regulation first. Mm-hmm. I have to go into my inner space and ask myself that question, do I want to be here or do I want to be in love? And then I need to spend a little bit of time with myself getting to the place where when I come to him, I'm actually that many steps closer to the space of love before then we try to do the co-regulating. And it is such a key to not try to solve the problem in that moment, meaning like the discussion and the issue that came up. Because what I found between us is that when we are willing to come back to love and come back to our practice and prioritize our harmony, the whatever we were identifying as a problem, it might not get solved immediately, but later there will be a more natural resolution that happens in the space of love versus in the space of trying to hash it out. Right. And like that is like such a huge revelation too. It has been for me in relationship to realize that when I come back to love and I let go of the struggle, whatever I was struggling with actually becomes resolved later by the flow of love because I've allowed it again.
Right. And there's something about, like, yeah, I think you used a good word. It's like when we're flooded, right? It's really hard to be, you can't listen. Once your heart rate goes up, I can't remember the exact measurement. Once your heart rate starts to rev because you're triggered or you're flooded, you can't listen. You can't reason. You're completely stuck in your own story about how something is upsetting you. And so to be able to have a go-to practice that two people agree to when we are upset, when we're flooded, let's not talk. Let's get our bodies that know each other, especially when our minds are in disconnect, and just allow the breath, the power of a meditative breath to center us, to come back. And then once your heart has settled down, that revving of the heart rate chills out a little bit, your capacity to then truly listen and try to understand why whatever is upsetting is important to your partner, how it upsets their heart. You're coming from a place of much more compassion to want to understand your lover, because there's something wonderful about feeling understood. When someone really wants to know, wow, this really upset you, that matters to me because you matter to me. And this is where, you know, then added communication skill sets are necessary in order to continue to be really good at conscious loving. It takes a lot of things, energy awareness, good communication, a willingness to get off it and not create a victim perpetrator dynamic that, you know, sets us apart. What is something, you know, you both mentioned the conscious cuddle, harmonization of moods and energies. Is there anything else that's a daily practice for the two of you that kind of keeps your relationship in good shape?
You know, one of my favorite things that Charles teaches that he does every day, multiple times a day, is a simple practice called magic moments. And it's just us moving through our day and like stepping into this moment that's like particularly joyful or there's laughter or there's beauty in it and grabbing a hold of it and looking into each other's eyes deeply and actually inhabiting that moment together. sharing that moment together. And it just punctuates the day with these juicy, you know, morsels of love and connection. I think it's so simple and it's so profound and powerful. And it really creates this thread of romance through our connection throughout the day. And I would also say we kiss a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Where we share the kisses.
Yeah. Love
Don't
that.
Skimp on the kisses.
No.
Kisses go such a long way.
Pauses during the video. We got a pause button.
Pause for a kiss.
And it's like we've been disconnected and out there on the television. Pause.
Aw. Okay, everyone take a pause, and if you're watching this with a partner, go ahead and kiss them.
And kiss, yeah.
You may now kiss the partner. Matthew! Oh, I love that. You know what else is powerful about that, just from my studies with positive psychology, is that it takes four positive experiences to knock out a negative memory. Because our brain is hardwired to remember negative stuff. It must just be a tripwire for our survival. But that's why, like, being intentional about positive magic moments can be so effective when you're making multiple daily deposits of something that is intentional, that is positive, that is loving, that connects you to the present moment. I think is again, it comes back to the brain. It comes back to like giving ourselves nourishment through connection. And so how would somebody who's not in partnership do something for themselves that kind of continues to nourish them and propels them in their own loving beingness?
Well, it's what masters throughout history have shared. Quiet the mind. Bring the two hemispheres of the mind into balance and dynamic expansion. And there are solo practices. We teach them in many of our courses called Laya Yoga, which work with the chakras, which work with the breathing, which work with your mind, which work with gentle stretching that has to do about stimulating a chakra, taking your focused mind, putting it on the chakra, taking your focused mind, where am I feeling this tightness, this blocked energy? Or if I were to go a little deeper into the stretch, this pain, and hold it in a position where I can send love to it. Instead of hating my pain, let me breathe in and own, here's my tight back. And then inwardly, as I exhale, relax everywhere where I'm feeling my cancer surgery, or being 75 years old. Owning that, but sending my love to it rather than hating that area. It was such a big aha when I had cancer and I had pain everywhere in my body. And even the pain pills weren't helping. And I just was sending so much hate to my body, to the cancer, to the pain. And I got it. Wait a minute. That's not what this needs. It's calling you. Feel me. I need your love. I need your attention. Feed me your breathing. And visualize. Visualize the darkness of the cancer being imprinted with light. So, not fighting pain, but owning it. There it is. Can I do something to lessen it? And the breathing, the concentration, and the ability to feel this so you can start to do this. And open feels so much better than closed.
Amen.
Where energy is blocked, it's painful or dysfunctional or diseased. Where energy moves,
pleasure.
Orgasm is an example of that, of energy and movement. Whoa, that's a nice. Getting a massage. When I got into bed last night, Christy said, I want to give you a little massage. And I watched myself. I wasn't even aware of how tight I was. And I watched it just release from her love and her skills. And me slowing down and going into receiver. Because I'm very much a doer.
Right. You're really speaking to healing yourself on a somatic level. Like instead of getting away from the pain and resisting and trying, there's always something that we want to resist and move away from. But that's the exact thing that is calling us to pay more attention to it, to get closer to it.
The physical brings you into contact with the energetic, mm-hmm. which links up. Where is the pain? What spinal section? Mm. Is it lumbar? Is it sacral? I'm feeling that area. Now let me send love to the chakra. Mm. Let me send an instruction as I breathe out. Open, awaken, heal. Because that's using these practices, the positions of Hatha yoga, but using all of your mind and all of your breath and tools of the mind, including energetic ones like yantras. Mm. Which are so beautiful.
You know, I want to speak to you guys were talking about these magic moments and the kisses that get infused throughout the day. And, you know, not a lot of couples don't spend all day together, right? They go off to work. They have many, many hours apart, which, you know, is why connecting when they come back from that separateness back together. But what are some tips or tricks or tools that you would have for those couples?
When someone comes home to the other, and you don't remember, this is a potential magic moment. Let me greet them. Mm-hmm. Let me put this on hold and let me greet them consciously with love and take a couple of breaths. Even they're still in the tension and the drive. If I do the breathing and send the energy out in a couple of moments, a minute, two breaths, the person feels welcome and valued. I don't say now come to bed. I say now do what you got to do from there.
Yeah.
Often we get home and we just want to be alone. Right. Don't need me now. Don't want me now. I just don't do.
Right.
Yeah.
But have you got a minute? Mm-hmm. Yeah. How can you say no to a minute of welcome?
I think so many of us are modeled.
The dog is right there ready to greet you when you come home. Hey, man, let's connect.
Yeah, oxytocin everywhere when you come home. I think so many of us were modeled that, oh, you're home. Oh, okay, good. Now, you know, here's your to-do list. Like, it's just, exactly.
You know, when you were away doing your work, that all of this happened.
Right, right.
Give me all the shit. I want to hear that when I come home exhausted.
Right. It creates for anxiety coming back together instead of like excitement coming back together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Like, you know, just imagine, listeners, what you could do to excite your partner on their way home, you know, so that they're coming home, not just to relax from a long day, but that they're excited to be with you and you're excited to be with them, because we can use mindfulness and intention. We can use the power of our mind to bring awareness to this, to create anticipation so that we look forward to the reuniting of our loved one, and to not take it for granted, because I think it's so easy to take our partners for granted. I know I'm certainly guilty of that, and it's something to just keep waking up to.
And, you know, I think we've lost our sense of awe in general. And so if you can also just open your mind and your eyes to moments of awe throughout the day, like, wow, those wildflowers over there, God, they're gorgeous. Snap a quick photo and send it to your sweetie. You know, quick little like, or just thinking about you, or a simple heart emoji goes a long way.
Yeah.
Is that what
those mean? Yeah. Yeah, a little deposit, little heart deposit.
Totally, deposit in the bank account.
You know, Charles, I know you have a really generous gift for our audience. Will you tell a little bit about the Intimacy Meditation for Two and the Secrets to Female Sexual Ecstasy video class?
I will. Artofconsciousloving.com. We'll get you a downloadable copy of our all-time best-selling video on Tantra. Secrets of Female Sexual
Ecstasy.
What Every Man Should Know. And we had students and myself and Caroline demonstrating, starting gentle and then building up. And there's about a 22-minute segment on sacred spot massage where you see the connection, you hear the breathing and the sound, and you see what a woman looks like when she's in not just high arousal, but sexual bliss. Most people miss the whole stage of arousal because they're trying to get to the end of the journey, orgasm. And it's during arousal, its various levels, that we can absorb the most energy and open the most blocks. So we seize that moment. Let me feel what I'm feeling and suck it up to my brain. Mm. I'm tingling, I'm vibrating, it feels good. Let me give my brain a bath of that and give it a sound. That's one of my favorite practices. And when you do that in arousal, it's very sexy and it connects the brain with the genitals through the neural pathways much easier, more current. But the sound on the exhalation deepens the arousal. Or if you do the technique just as you're coming into orgasm, I'm coming. You take your slowest, deepest breath. I'm feeling coming. What is that to you? There's that feeling. Okay, let me feel it and connect it to my brain. And then immediately make a sound. The exhalation can any sound that is relevant to what you're feeling. And choose a vowel and sound it.
Yes. And I can say, I think all three women on this in this interview right now can testify that this technique is very efficacious. Let me tell you, it really, really, really works. It supersizes every orgasm from here on out.
As long as you're sounding, you don't drop from the peak of I'm coming down the mountains, down quick drop. You stay on a high level of arousal. And then you're out of breath. But you're still tingling, you're still vibrating. What if I were to feel down there and suck up that feeling to my brain? There's the second wave or the second orgasm. And we can have multiple breaths of orgasms. So we settle for 5 seconds, average normal. And we do all this stuff and fight about the energy and for 5 seconds of bliss. Now, if you can get a 600% gain on doing a technique,
Why wouldn't you do it? So you've got two incredible video tutorials that Charles is giving away as his gift to you. And if you really like this interview, you got to go check out episode number 8 of the Sex Reimagined podcast, because it's one of the most popular episodes of the show so far. And you'll really, really enjoy more of Charles's wisdom. Thank you so much to the two of you for being here. And I think one thing that's really cool is Charles Muir's former wife, Caroline Muir, who's featured on that Secrets to Female Sexual Ecstasy video, is also a part of this summit series. And one of the things that Charles has always exemplified is happily ever after, even after the breakup of a relationship. And so we look forward to you getting to meet Queenie. And and thank you so much, Christy. It's been so fun to have you on here representing this beautiful
work. I know,
it's
so fun to see you guys together.
And you can see Charles and Christy, they've got weekend seminars all over the country, mostly in California, but also in some places on the East Coast. So be sure to take a look at their calendar. It is one of the best weekend tantra seminars, hands down,
absolutely,
that you could ever go and treat yourself to. It's so comprehensive.
Change your life.
And you'll deepen and your heart will be touched. So don't hesitate. They're incredible teachers.
And we have scheduled that are just waiting for it to go online. A couples only vacation, 8 days.
Oh, good.
That's right.
In spa in Mexico. And we're putting together one for singles, because many of the students that come to our class are singles.
That's right.
And to have a fun vacation with conscious people that want to explore conscious relationship and do some of the non-sexual practices that are so juicy that you want to get good at. I'm excited by being on vacation and getting paid to do it.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
That's going to be on sourcetantra.com, where they can find that.
That's on our schedule already.
Lots to look forward to. Thank you. All right.
Yeah,
y'all.
Love you.
Much love. Love, love,
love. Love, 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 love.
Now, our favorite part, the dish.
Mr. and Mrs. Muir, it's time to dish it up.
Well, there's so much to dish on these two. I mean, just wow. Charles Muir is one of the biggest pioneers in the States around Tantra. So, and you have had the pleasure of teaching alongside of him for over 15 years.
Well, yeah, 20 plus years, Charles and I.
20 plus years.
We're a dynamic duo.
I know. I actually really love the way you guys teach together. And now Christy's teaching those weekends with him, huh?
I've handed the baton over to Christy, and she's taking the world by storm. And she's such a great teacher. She's really, she's so smart, and and I just adore who she is, and just so happy that they're both happy and they've been together now. I think it's our 10-year anniversary.
10?
I think so.
I thought it was like 5 or something.
No, because Matt and I have been together for 6 or 7 years, and I think they were together for 3 or 4 years.
They were together first. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think they met 2012.
And they teach
Tantra
really well together.
2012
too.
Is when they first met. Yeah.
Charles saw her with her hula hoops and her blue hair, and it was all over.
It was all over.
Game over.
Game over. Game on.
Game on. Old game over, new game on.
Yeah.
They're together.
So she's, and she's seen him through a lot of things. I mean, really,
the
cancer, episode was really serious. I mean, we thought we were going to lose him. And, it's pretty amazing that he pulled through from that. And then, you know, surviving the Santa Cruz fire and then moving up north
Sacramento.
And, well, it'd be really fun to, you know, dish after having our interview with Caroline, because when I came on the scene, it was, you know, Caroline was still teaching quite a bit with Charles. She handed the baton over to me.
Right.
And then I handed the baton over to Christy.
Christy.
So it's been kind of a really interesting legacy, this era of just being in the world of Tantra with Charles and all the things that we've sort of explored and experienced. I mean, I don't even know how to even start what to say about like the magnitude of who he's been in my life.
Right.
I mean, I really credit him for so much of my personal somatic healing experiences and overcoming so much distress that I wrestled with in my being. I mean, a lot of self-esteem issues, self-worth issues.
Yeah. You did a lot of healing in that relationship.
So much. And there, you know, there just comes a time when it's time for your next teacher. It's time for your next relationship.
Your next endeavor.
One chapter ends, so another chapter can begin. And I'm really grateful for that too.
I'm glad you got all the time as you did teaching with him, and you know, it's still in the mix. So it always will be. You guys will always be family and love each other and be there for each other. And I think it's really beautiful, the dynamic that, you know, that you and Matt have with them. You guys have dinner with them, I think, once a week or something like that.
Yeah, we like to do family Sunday dinners.
Yeah.
Not every Sunday, but
they watch your dog. Even when you're not out of town, they're like, can we take your dog?
They love my dog. Charles asked for Chewy sleepovers, you know, when he's just like, I need an animal.
Yeah, so sweet.
Chewy's such love. And Chewy loves Charles. I mean,
really?
You want to hear Chewy's like, Chewy doesn't bark, but when Charles pulls in the driveway, he's so excited. It's like he just moans and groans. Papa Meatball is here.
Oh my God. I love it. Yeah. Well, Charles is those big old healing hands. He's got like the biggest hands, and they're full of chi. They're full of energy.
Truly.
So I'm sure any animal would be like, touch me some more.
Yes, the look of bliss on Chewy's face when he's sitting next to Charles and Charles is petting his head.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of women have had that response with Charles too.
Absolutely.
So he's still hanging in there, 75 and kicking. And it's interesting, you know, too, like just watching how the world changes, and people change too, but not all that much. Yeah. You know, it's like he has this amazing, timeless wisdom. And sometimes his package is a little old fashioned, you know, in terms of, you know, parts of the piece.
But he's been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, he comes from a totally different era. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can... Some people can get bothered by that. Other people can embrace it and just, you know, call it what it is. It can be charming or it can be frustrating. Mm-hmm. It's up to you how you want to receive it. But I think being generous with our assumptions and just allowing people to just be who they are.
Absolutely. I mean, shit, yeah.
You know? So interesting how generations change and evolve and our expectations of each other to change and evolve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but coming from like for the first time in my life, you know, when you were the generation, they're like, oh, those kids these days. And now you're old enough to go, oh, those kids.
Oh,
these
yeah.
Days.
I like, say oh it when God. I go to the gym up at UCSC. I'm like, that fucking kids
those
these
kids.
Days. They like, well, look in your eyes. I did have a cute young man look in my eyes today. I was like, oh, a cute young man.
Yeah, nice. That's fun. Look into my eyes.
Little shot of Jing Chi. I'm like, I'll take it.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. I really loved, you know, in their interview, how they just exemplified, you know, they walk their talk and such an example of what they're talking about. And those magic moments, you know, like you can get those magic moments as a single person. Absolutely. You just have to recognize them and ingest them into your nervous system. And it is a lot. I don't know if it's a lot easier, but it does feel easier when somebody else is there and you can do it with them, you know,
yeah,
seal it with a kiss.
With someone.
It's like, it feels more tangible, but those magic moments are everywhere all the time. And
well, I think as an individual, you know,
as an individual,
even if I'm in a relationship,
yeah,
I owe it to myself to create those intentional magic moments, like smelling the flower, you know, that's outside, or like, you know,
the most delightful
appreciating
rose the other day.
The produce that I bought. Look, this tomato is so beautiful. It's
You're
so red.
Such
Let
a
me
produce
smell it.
Appreciator.
I am, really, truly am. A bite of ice cream, you know, like I don't need the whole bowl. Give me three bites
Just
out of the
one
carton.
Bite,
and I'm going to have a magic moment with that coffee ice cream, baby. Mm-hmm. Taking a bath, or like shampooing your hair, like these are the moments of awe, of pleasure, of savoring.
Awakening your senses, you know? And we spent so much time in our prefrontal cortex, and I really loved too what Charles was bringing in around like shift the structures in your brain, like quiet the amygdala, like start to open up the hippocampus, make that relationship between memory and like not feeling safe, like let's shift that
associations,
that circuitry, and create a new circuitry. So it's, we've got these bodies, y'all, like let's use them, let's start paying attention
let's
to them,
be in them,
let's use the vehicle that you're in a way that is going to work for you. That's what Tantra really is about.
That's really what Tantra is all about. It's about being embodied.
Yeah.
And being there for the emotions that run through it, and for the pleasure that's available for it, and for the life that is streaming in it. I mean, my God, there's something about feeling alive that is so enlivening. And that is also a fucking mindset, you know, like just jump in. The only one holding you back is you. So
that's right. Yeah.
Bada bing, bada boom.
You got this. You got this. Yeah. All right, we'll see you on the
other
side.
Love, everyone.
Ciao.
Thanks for tuning in. This episode was hosted by Tantric Sex Master Coach and Positive Psychology Facilitator, Leah Piper, as well as by Chinese and Functional Medicine Doctor and Taoist Sexology Teacher, Dr. Willow Brown. Don't forget, your comments, likes, subscribes, and suggestions matter. Let's realize this new world together.
Awaken Arousal Oil is my new best friend. Like Laura says, holy forking shirt balls, did it deliver on its promise. I could feel the blood flow and warmth, and that was the easiest I've ever achieved multiple orgasms. This is all natural botanical oils. It is made with CBD because CBD helps relax muscles and it eases tension. This stuff smells so good, and it mixes with your pheromones like mwah, So good. Get yourself some. Link is in the show notes.